He's done. He's done.
You're not going to believe this. I just got a call from the network.
The network just announced that it has signed a national broadcast deal with Professional Wrestling League Ring of Honor.
Well, that's great. That's just fucking great, man. Now what the fuck are we supposed to do? That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over. What the fuck are we going to do now? What are we going to do?
It's business time, baby.
The Solid Monster sounds off.
My client, Brock Lesnar, conquered a streak.
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
He's fat. You haven't been beat up properly. Woo!
I just saw that the Stardom promotion in Japan has announced that Yoshiko, the female wrestler I told you guys about, who beat the shit out of her opponent earlier this year, basically fractured her entire face. She's only 21 years old, and she is going to announce her retirement at the next show in a few weeks. Apparently nobody wants to hire her. Good! Blackballer from the entire industry. Maybe you're not fit to do this for a living. Maybe you have some other calling in life. Hopefully she'll learn from this and won't attack the store manager at Subway when he asks her to work the night shift. This is episode 385 of the Solid Monster Sounds Off here for Elimination Chamber Sunday, May 31st, 2015. I am the Solid Monster. Thank you for all of the positive feedback to last week's show, especially the TNA stuff. I got a ton of it, and we've got a bombshell to get into this week, but we're going to do predictions first for the show tonight, and then we'll get into the big news of the week. Maybe the big news of the year. How's that sound? Good? Super. First, got some business to tell you about. Some of you used our Audible trial to sign up and get the Losing the Signal book I told you about last week as your free Audible book. When you sign up for an Audible trial, you get 30 days. You can try out the service. They don't charge you. You can cancel at any point if it's not your thing. And you get to keep one free audiobook that you get to cash in. Losing the Signal, it's just a book about the rise and the fall of BlackBerry and what the iPhone had to do with. That's a small part of it. It really is more about the BlackBerry story. And ironically, a couple days later, somebody, I forgot who it was, sent me a link to a story. Apparently BlackBerry is laying off just like tens of thousands of employees, which is terrible. But the timing was quite interesting with this book coming out. So if you want to read more about that, you don't even have to read. It's audio format, so you can listen to it wherever you are, on the go, at home, wherever. That's one of 180,000 plus titles that they offer through Audible. There are a ton of wrestling related books, obviously a lot more non-wrestling related books. So give it a shot, and every time you sign up, it helps the show a little bit. So why not? Audibletrial.com/Solid Monster is our custom URL. It's not enough to just punch that in or click on it. You've got to follow through. We get a ton of clicks, but they don't always convert to signups because I think maybe people have second thoughts, but a lot of people probably just don't realize how this works. You have to sign up for the actual 30-day trial and then cash in your free book, and every time you do that, again, it helps the podcast out. So audibletrial.com/Solid Monster. They've been a partner of ours for a while. They are a friend of the Sound Off, and any friend of the Sound Off is a friend to you as well. So take advantage of the free book, audibletrial.com/Solid Monster. Also, we have a new shirt up in our store on ProWrestlingTees.com. I teased you. Get it? Tease? Yeah, it was really poor. I'm sorry. Anyway, last week I told you there was a new shirt going up any day now. I think it went up the day after. It is the Didn't Happen shirt, which would be appropriate to wear on Thursdays if you catch my drift, or if anybody happens to be going perhaps to a SmackDown taping. So you can get that in the store right now, ProWrestlingTees.com/SolidMonsterSoundsOff. All shirts, including that one, are up to size 5XL. They ship all over the world, no matter where you are. It is global. So head on over there. It's one of now 20 shirts that we have up in the store. This is the latest one. I've gotten a lot of compliments on the design. I didn't create it. Lance, who is a wizard when it comes to this stuff, you know who you are. He's listening right now. Thank you. He is the wonderful Sound Off t-shirt wizard. So definitely head over there and pick up a shirt. And also, if you like what you hear each and every week, please consider making a PayPal donation. You could do that on thesolomonster.com. $10 or more will get you a wrestling nickname and a shout-out. $30 or more will get you the shout-out. Plus, you can promote whatever your podcast may be, or if you have a YouTube channel, some kind of business venture, whatever it may be. You get a brief shout-out for that as well. The URL, just make sure you provide me with whatever information I need, and I will happily give you a shout-out here on the show. So let's just run down a quick list here of people who have supported the podcast this past week. Thank you very much to Yvonne, Bruiser Balak, Man Up, Manny Alcantara, Damn Straight, Michael Dorsey, Beast Mode, Brock Joseph, Judge and Jury, Justin Girardi, Joseph, this is a good one, Joseph Jam My Fist in Your Eye, Justice. Kind of a mouthful, but I like it. I like it. Bombastic, Jared Gaines, Rambo, Randall Woodard, King Curtis Fleece, Elijah the Monster Melton, and Billy Hardcore Habibi. Thank you, guys. I appreciate it. Again, make a donation on thesolomonster.com. The box is on the right-hand side. That is still the best, quickest, most appreciative way to show your support for this podcast if you like what you hear. WWE Elimination Chamber is tonight as I am recording this. It airs on the WWE Network exclusively here in the States. I guess it might be on pay channels elsewhere in the world. It is from Corpus Christi, Texas, which is notoriously a terrible city when it comes to WWE shows. Terrible city meaning not that they necessarily have trouble turning people out. It's just that for whatever reason, the people who come out, by and large, they don't react as well as people in other cities. Now, that's not to say that tonight we won't get one of the better Corpus Christi crowds. I hope we do, especially for Kevin Owens' sake. I would hate it if he went out there and people just kind of sat on their hands. I don't think that would be an accurate representation of what people think of Kevin Owens. I'm just saying, you know, Corpus Christi, hit or miss. More miss than hit, usually. Let's run down the card here. We'll start from the bottom, work our way up to the top. We have a Miz TV segment on the pre-show. Miz will be hosting Daniel Bryan. I don't know why. I don't know if that's leading to anything, if they just wanted to have a way to get Bryan on the show, if he can even get physical with the Miz. Probably not, but he'll be there. We have Neville against Bo Dallas. I'm going to go with Neville here. I could see them giving Bo a win if they're going to extend this out for another pay-per-view. I think that would be a terrible idea. I think the quicker this feud goes, the better off Neville will be, since they seemingly have nothing planned for Bo Dallas anyway, and they're not going to go with the idea that I pitched as far as putting him with Bray as a lackey. It's seemingly not going to happen. So Neville should go over here, and they should get him as far away from this feud as possible. So Neville's my pick. Nikki Bella, Naomi, and Paige. Triple threat match for the Divas Championship. It's time. It's time to pull the trigger on Naomi. She's great as a heel. She's got talent. Nikki has had the title, I think, since Survivor Series last year. Enough already. It's time for Naomi to get the shot, so she is my pick. We have New Day. Tyson Kidd and Cesaro, Los Matadores, the Lucha Dragons, the Ascension, and the Primetime Players in an Elimination Chamber match. The first time ever that the tag team titles are being contested inside the Elimination Chamber. I guess both members of the team will be in the same pod. That'll be interesting to see. Hopefully nobody cuts the cheese in there. I feel sorry, let me tell you, if it's Kofi Kingston or Xavier Woods teaming up with Big E and they're in that pod together and Big E cuts the cheese, oof, I would not want to be the other member of New Day. I'm going to go with New Day. I think it's too soon to take the tag team titles off of them. They've got a good thing going right now, finally, after all these months. It took them that long for them to figure out this is the best role for them. I like what they're doing. And I just think, you know, I'm looking at the lineup here, and the only thing that would really make sense to me, I mean, I guess you could put the titles on, like, the Lucha Dragons. None of these other teams are getting a big push right now. It's really all been about New Day and Kidd and Cesaro. So you can put the belts back on Kidd and Cesaro. I just wouldn't do it on the show. I think you can extend that out a little bit longer. And also conspicuous by their absence in this match is Harper and Rowan. They don't have a match on the show at all. I don't know if that means they didn't want to beat them and they're saving them to win the titles maybe a few weeks down the road or at the next pay-per-view. You know, I could see a babyface team like maybe Kidd and Cesaro winning here if the idea is just to use them as transitional champions to get the belts onto Harper and Rowan. But I just think New Day's got a good thing going. And if you do that, then that means they've got no plans to put the belts back on New Day. What do you do with them then? They're a tag team, right? They're at the pinnacle of what they can do right now as a tag team. So I think it would be foolish to have the belts taken off them. So New Day is my pick. In the other Elimination Chamber match, we have Sheamus, King Barrett, R-Truth, Ryback, Rusev, and Dolph Ziggler, all fighting for the vacant Intercontinental Championship. Rusev would have been my pick, but it appears he may now be out of the Elimination Chamber match after suffering, I'm not quite sure if it's a foot injury, if it's an ankle injury, some sort of foot-related injury during his match with Ryback on SmackDown. And before everybody comes at me and says, well, Salamaster, I thought if it happened on SmackDown, it didn't happen. That only applies to creative. Okay, we're talking matches and stories that they book. They didn't book this injury. This is not a worked injury. So therefore, I do not count this. There are rumors of having Bray Wyatt maybe replace Rusev in the match if he can't go. Although Ryback is, Rusev, is still listed on the WWE website as being in this match. They have not acknowledged the injury. He is still in the lineup for the match. It's possible maybe he'll be in there with a boot or a cast on his foot and they'll do something to get him out early. I don't know what that would be. But my guess is he's not going to be in this match. So it could be Bray Wyatt, I guess, replacing him. I know Ryback, I've read, is also legit hurt. He's still having problems with his ribs thanks to that last pay-per-view match with Wyatt. But I'm pretty sure Ryback is still going to be in there. I know somebody who could take Rusev's place. Or they could still do it the way I pitched it last week and have him attack R-Truth before he gets to the ring and take R-Truth's spot in the pod. Either way, Tyler Breeze needs to be in this thing and he needs to win the Intercontinental title. That's how I would debut him. If he's in there, he's my pick. If he's not in there, Sheamus is my pick to win. We have John Cena against Kevin Owens. Champion against champion, non-title match. Kevin Owens has signed a main roster contract. He is booked on all of the Raw shows going forward, as well as the Battleground pay-per-view in July. I would guess Money in the Bank, too, but I know he's in advertising for the Battleground pay-per-view. He's also booked to replace Rusev on house shows, a lot of the house shows going forward with him out injured. That makes Kevin Owens the fastest indie call-up from NXT to date. And he has two new shirts, apparently, that are coming out today. That's in addition to the first shirt they made for him that we saw on Raw last week. I'm not counting the KO shirt from NXT. I'm just counting the new ones. That's three new shirts in the span of just a few weeks. Not bad. Not bad for a guy who's only first hitting the main roster this week. You know, if they're making all this merch for him, it must be selling very well. And if your merchandise is selling well, that's one surefire way to get Vince McMahon's attention. So that's a plus for him. So, about the match. This all changes things a bit now, doesn't it? Given that they're going to be keeping him around, that means John Cena does not have to beat him, especially if it's a non-title match. Now, I said last week in explaining why I thought John Cena should win, I made it very, very clear. This is not backtracking. I was very, very clear in explaining that I thought John Cena should win that match only if the plan was to then demote Kevin Owens effectively back to NXT for 6 months until they found a role for him permanently on the main roster. However, if they were going to keep him around a little bit longer, he was going to split time, be appearing on Raw a little more regularly, or if they're just going to flat out call his ass up, which apparently is what they've done, although it's not as though he's now gone from NXT, I guess the plan is to slowly transition him out. I don't know if that means they'll do an angle where he gets stripped, if he's going to lose the championship. Maybe he'll lose it to Samoa Joe. Maybe he'll lose it to Finn Balor. He's the number one contender. I don't know when they're doing that match. But it appears to be just about the end of Kevin Owens on NXT. And so with him being on the main roster, it changes things. I mean, there's no reason now to bring this guy up, and he's got a lot of momentum, only to beat him clean in the middle of the ring. Now, he has gone over John Cena twice on television. He has laid him out both times with his move. He went on SmackDown and basically insulted all of his t-shirts. It's been all Kevin Owens so far. you would think then that WWE would want to throw Cena a bone and give him a win, but I now think that that would be a mistake. So here's my prediction. I predict that John Cena's next challenger for the U.S. Championship, whoever that may be, will get involved in the match. That person will play a role in assisting Kevin Owens with the win. So yes, it's a cheap win, but a win is a win. He's a heel. It doesn't matter. Kevin Owens does not have to beat John Cena clean. In fact, I don't think Kevin Owens should beat John Cena clean. It doesn't make any sense. John Cena is one of the biggest baby faces in the company. He doesn't have to win the match, but you know, Kevin Owens has laid him out twice now. If he's going to win, there should be some sort of controversy involved. I got no problem with that. So, and it's a non-title match, so it's not like you got to switch the U.S. belt. You know, Owens can get the win, but not the championship. It keeps him strong. Cena now has a program for the next couple of months with whoever it may be. I mean, who could they set Cena up with next? You know, Wyatt's not doing anything, but we definitely do not need to see that again. Big Show? Oh, God. I don't even want to think about that. I know Big Show's due back any day. It's like, pick your poison. Do you want him to go right back to feuding with Roman Reigns, or do you put him in a feud with John Cena? I don't want to say either one of those things. Maybe Owens. You know what? Maybe I'm overthinking this. Maybe Kevin Owens, the plan is to just keep this feud going with him and Cena for the rest of the summer. You know, maybe that's the idea. In that case, I think Owens should definitely win this match. Otherwise, it's John Cena versus Bray Wyatt all over again, where Cena beats the guy in the first match of the feud. We all know how that turned out for Bray Wyatt. And the main event, Seth Rollins defends the WWE World Heavyweight Championship against Dean Ambrose. This is a match I've been waiting for a long time. They had that awesome non-title match on Raw a few weeks ago that had some time. They gave him like 14, 15 minutes. The title wasn't on the line, but it had great heat. The people were into it. They were into the near falls. These two guys work great together. Now it's on basically a pay-per-view. I mean, that's basically what this is. And the championship is on the line. You would think that the fans would be hanging on every near fall, as over as Dean Ambrose is right now. Again, it's Corpus Christi, so we don't know how the crowd is going to be. But I'm looking forward to this match a lot. I'm looking forward to the top two matches, really. I think up and down, this is a very strong card. You put the chamber matches in there. It's hard to have a bad chamber match. You look at some of the guys who are in those matches. I think this could turn out to be a real sleeper show for WWE this year. As far as the main event, prediction, Seth Rollins is my pick. I'd love to see them give Dean Ambrose even just a quick run with the belt, see how he does. I think if they were going to do that, the time to do it was at the Payback show. Because they had such a quick turnaround with Elimination Chamber coming 2 weeks later, and Rollins was going to be due his rematch, you could have turned right back around, did the rematch, let Rollins get the belt back. So yes, it's a brief reign for Ambrose, but that would have been the way to do it. Now, I don't see them putting the championship on Ambrose. I just don't. I think with Brock coming back soon, you know, there's a ready-made match there for him and Rollins that should be for the championship since Brock never got his rematch. Brock versus Ambrose, I mean, that might be a good match, but it doesn't make any sense. Not now, anyway. So Rollins is my pick. How it happens, I'm sure there's some bullshit involved with Kane. It always seems to come down to Kane, doesn't it? I'm sure he'll either be out there or he will rear his ugly head at some point and factor into the finish. Maybe they could do a disputed finish where they don't have to beat Ambrose clean. I don't know what direction they're going to go in. My guess would be that Rollins does beat Ambrose, probably, you know, pins him after some interference, and he will still be the WWE champion, and they will continue on with this authority storyline and whatever plans they have for it. The big story this week, we can get to the really big news now. Ring of Honor is coming to Destination America this week. Talk about quick turnaround. This Wednesday, June 3rd, 8 p.m. Eastern, Ring of Honor has found a national cable home, and it just so happens to be the home of TNA, Impact Wrestling. So that's kind of a big story that came out of left field and nobody was expecting. That is also when the switch from Fridays to Wednesdays goes into effect. So it's not just that they're coming on to the same station as Impact. Impact is being moved from Friday nights to Wednesday nights, and their first night on Wednesday is this week. So the very same night that ROH debuts is the is the first night for Impact on Wednesdays. So effectively, Ring of Honor is now going to be the lead-in for Impact Wrestling, creating a three-hour block of wrestling on Destination America every Wednesday, and creating something of a Wednesday night war now if you count NXT and Lucha Underground, both of which air new episodes on Wednesday. So it's funny to me that, you know, traditionally Wednesday was always kind of the dead day when it came to pro wrestling. I remember years ago Vince McMahon saying, all right, you know, my goal is to have a show on every night of the week, including Wednesday at some point. Well, now you look at Wednesday, everybody wants to be on Wednesday. There's nobody anymore now. Well, I guess New Japan has their show on Friday. And Tuesdays, you know, Tough Enough is going to be debuting on Tuesdays. Total Divas is moving from Sundays to Tuesdays. So Tuesday will be a big night for a while. WWE is basically going to be competing against itself for a few weeks there. So it's very interesting the way the landscape has seemingly changed almost overnight. So here's what we know so far. It is a short-term deal, 26 weeks. I think that takes them into, what, December, I believe? It takes them through the end of the year. These will not be new episodes in addition to ROH's syndicated show on the Sinclair stations. This will be the exact same one-hour show that airs right now. This is not a New Japan-type thing where they're showing ROH highlights from a year ago or 2 years ago. This is the first-run show that airs every week on Sinclair stations. For people who have Sinclair stations in their market, we here in New York, for example, do not. So that's the show that they're going to be airing. Sinclair will get to air them first on Saturdays, and then Destination America will air that same episode a few days later. So if you already have ROH on a Sinclair station in your area, this is probably not going to affect you too much. For somebody like me, though, in a major market like New York City, where we do not get Ring of Honor somehow, as ridiculous as that sounds, I thought it was even more ridiculous to find out that ROH, I don't believe there is a Sinclair market in Philadelphia. Philadelphia is like the home. I mean, not anymore. I mean, Sinclair now is based, I think, has offices in Baltimore. But traditionally, Philly was like the home of Ring of Honor, and they don't have a Sinclair station. How crazy is that? So this changes all of that. This is a much bigger deal for people like that, for people like me, because now I can watch their show without having to sit in front of my computer screen. And it's obviously a huge deal for Ring of Honor, because for the first time in their 13 years of existence, they have a national cable clearance. You know, Destination America reaches, I looked it up, it's about 57 million homes in the U.S. It's a step down for TNA, you know, having come from Spike TV, which is a much more widely accessible network, more popular. But Ring of Honor had no such luxury like TNA did, coming from a big network like Spike TV. So for them, it's a total win-win. What this also means is that Ring of Honor is now officially the number two wrestling promotion in the country in terms of exposure. You know, we've asked this question before when TNA first came to Destination America. And the answer then was no. TNA was still the de facto number two promotion, even though they were on a weaker network. A very distant number two, but still number two, that can no longer be said. Now, yes, they are on the same network, the two promotions, but unlike TNA, Ring of Honor still gets to air their show on the Sinclair stations all across the country. So they're reaching more TV homes now than TNA does. ROH still runs live events. TNA doesn't run house shows anymore. I mean, they may start up again in the fall, from what I understand. But right now, they have their annual UK tour, they have their TV tapings, they maybe have one or two pay-per-views a year, and that's it. And, of course, Ring of Honor, you know, they have merchandise that they sell as well. I don't know if they make more money on merch than TNA does, but the point is, with this deal, ROH overtakes TNA, at least here in the U.S. TNA still has a lot of international deals. I guess that they're still far bigger than Ring of Honor is in the U.K., for example. Although I don't know that for sure. Perhaps some of our UK peeps can chime in on that. Lucha Underground, as much as I love it, you cannot say it's number two. You can't even say it's number three. They're not a wrestling promotion. Lucha Underground is a TV show. By their own admission, they are a television show. That is all they are. They do not tour. I don't believe they market any merchandise. They don't have pay-per-views and big special events. It's the show every week on El Rey. That's it. Now, if Lucha Underground were to be picked up for a second season on a station like Univision, that changes the game because Univision is huge. Huge! Now, I've read that they're working on closing a major deal to bring the show to Televisa in Mexico, which would be big. But as far as the U.S., if they come back, and that's not a confirmed story, by the way. I had people all week long messaging me, you know, boy, I bet Salamanca is happy that Lucha Underground got renewed for a second season. That was something a website picked up on some corporate page. I don't know if it was for El Rey or the larger entity maybe that El Rey is part of. But on their corporate site, there was some kind of a release about the upcoming television season. But whatever was there had not been updated in 2 months. They were probably assuming and looking, you know, further ahead than maybe they should have. But that was apparently just sitting there on that website for a couple of months and was nothing new that was recently posted. So until I see the press release, it's not official. My guess is, though, they end up back on El Rey. That would be my guess. In terms of quality, Lucha Underground blows away everybody else, even NXT, by at least a small margin. I mean, it is so head and shoulders above every other wrestling product on television in this country right now. And I'm not counting the New Japan show. That is more of a highlight show. It's not a first-run show, so you can't really judge it that way. Lucha Underground is so far and away ahead of everything else. You will not get an argument out of me in terms of the quality of the show. They are number one in that respect. But you can't really call them a promotion. Plus, getting 60,000 or 80,000, which I think is what they're up to now, viewers each week on El Rey, which is an improvement. Remember, you know, early on when I would talk about the ratings, the viewers for Lucha Underground, it was in the range of like 20 and 30,000. And now apparently they're in the 60 to 80,000 range. So they've shown growth, but that's still only 80,000 people. That's nothing compared to the audience that TNA and probably Ring of Honor is going to pull on Destination America, where it's in the hundreds of thousands. So this is a big, big deal, especially for ROH. So what does this mean for TNA? Does it mean that Dave Meltzer's story that I talked about last week from the Wrestling Observer was wrong? Does it mean TNA and ROH are going to work together or do some sort of invasion angle or talent swap? No. Meltzer's story is no more wrong today than it was last week. In fact, in this week's newsletter, he reprinted the internal memo that was circulated several weeks ago at Destination America that announced they would not be renewing Impact as of the third quarter 2015. And that they hope that the new show that would be airing in its place on Friday nights, this American Tales show, I guess it's called, and this is what it said in the memo, they hope that it would be good news given all the advertisers that had TNA on their DNA list, DNA being short for Do Not Advertise. He didn't make that up. Meltzer did not make that up. The decision was made not to renew Impact and to use that out clause in September to escape the contract. That does not mean that Destination America can't change their minds. Apparently that memo went out. It was circulated. I want to say it was probably like May 11, May 12. I think it came before the announcement that they were shifting Impact from Fridays to Wednesdays. So obviously that changed after they made the decision to cut them. They weren't supposed to move from Fridays. All of a sudden they moved them from Fridays to Wednesdays. So it's very possible that they can change their minds, you know, but people need to understand that if they do, that doesn't make, you know, Meltzer a liar. That doesn't mean all these rumors and stories were all false. And he's heard nothing different, so as of right now, TNA is on its way off the station. Now, if advertisers don't like wrestling, then why would Destination America make a deal with ROH? Good question. It may just be a TNA thing, not a wrestling thing. I'm not sure. I don't have the answer. Even if it is a wrestling issue and bringing in Ring of Honor does not solve that, Destination America is getting the ROH show for a lot cheaper than they did TNA Impact. The costs associated with Impact far outweigh the perceived benefit that Destination America is getting by airing the show if people don't want to advertise on the show. So I think that's really the key that people are missing here. Well, that story was clearly bullshit. Oh, they don't want to advertise during wrestling, so Destination America goes and gets another wrestling show. You got to understand how this works. I don't know the exact dollar figure per episode they're paying TNA to air Impact, but obviously for Destination America, it's a significant amount of money. Now, it's not as much as what TNA was making from Spike. They took a step down with this deal. But, you know, they're making good money. Now, if nobody wants to advertise during wrestling in general, well, that's a problem for Destination America, because no matter how decent the ratings may be, and they fluctuate a lot, there are weeks where Impact does pretty well. There's a lot of weeks where Impact does not do well at all. But if they're paying TNA a boatload of money and advertisers don't want to advertise during that show, and they have this out clause where they can cut bait in September, and before then, let's bring in another wrestling product, because we really want to have wrestling on our network. But Ring of Honor has already produced this show every single week. The show's already, it's done. We don't have to do any work on it. It's cheap. They give us the tape, and we air it. So even if people still don't want to advertise during wrestling, they're still saving money. They're just replacing one wrestling brand with another and saving a few bucks. What's so hard to understand about that? So I think that might be what we're looking at here. Now, this news caught TNA completely off guard, including Dixie Carter. Surprise, surprise. They are not in cahoots with Ring of Honor. They are not working at this point anyway with ROH, no matter how what kind of happy face they're trying to put on it publicly. They are not working on an angle. They are not doing some sort of invasion storyline. Apparently, Destination America and Ring of Honor have been talking for months. This is not something that only happened in the last 2 weeks with the news that broke about TNA and their future. And so Ring of Honor swooped in and they took advantage. They've been speaking for months, long before the decision was made to not renew Impact. And this happened to be the week that they signed the actual deal and made the announcement. For Destination America, though, to not even give Dixie Carter a heads up, I mean, they don't need her blessing the way that, you know, Spike TV felt they needed Vince McMahon's blessing to allow Ultimate Fighter on the air after Raw Monday nights. Vince said yes, and look at the monster with UFC that he's helped create. I wonder if he regrets that decision now. Destination America did not need Dixie Carter's permission to negotiate with Ring of Honor, but the fact that they didn't even let her know tells you everything you need to know about what they think of TNA right now. They didn't find out until that morning. I don't think they found out until everybody else did on Twitter. Totally blindsided by the news. And coming off the rumors of that botched email that Dixie sent to the president of the network, calling them dummies, all I could say is, what a heel turn by Destination America. This is better than any storyline we have seen on WWE or TNA television all year. Maybe all of last year, too. I mean, this will go down as one of the biggest fuck yous in wrestling history. The only way this could possibly be spun as good news for TNA is if Ring of Honor's lead-in actually bolsters their own ratings and they can add a couple of 100,000 new viewers for Impact. Where those people are coming from, I don't know. And if, you know, the network picks up some new loyal Ring of Honor watchers, the really hardcore loyal ROH fans, they don't like TNA. So it's not like magically Impact is going to have 300,000 or 400,000 new viewers. But maybe they will. Maybe I'm wrong, and maybe these people will somehow materialize, and it will help TNA in that way. But here's the thing. Even then, there's no guarantee that Destination America won't change its mind, and, you know, they're still going to drop TNA when September rolls around. Think about this. Some of the TNA diehards trying to spin this as nothing but good news. Okay, I want them to think about this. Think about when TNA signed with Destination America and Dixie Carter claimed that, remember when she was talking about how, you know, Spike TV just wasn't a good partner. They needed, TNA needed a second show. We needed more programming, or we needed Impact to go to 2 hours. We needed more. And Spike wasn't willing to give it to us. And now, oh, we have the partner that's going to allow us to produce lots of new programming. And they did at first. They added a replay airing of Impact with little pop-up text bubbles written by Mike Tenay. They added another series that highlighted some of TNA's greatest matches. And guess what happened? They were all canceled in the last several weeks. Impact is now the only TNA show left on Destination America. if all was well with TNA and Destination America, instead of getting rid of all of the extra shows, wouldn't they be keeping them? Wouldn't they be adding more? No! What do? They sign a deal with a rival wrestling company. TNA and Ring of Honor are rivals. They do not like each other. And they don't even give TNA any warning about it. Okay? So I would pose that question there to the TNA diehards. What do you make of that? How do you spin your way out of that? Because there are some who are trying to say, well, this is a positive. This is good news. You know, and they're gonna partner, and it's gonna be great for both companies. Yeah, it's gonna be great for Ring of Honor. TNA, I'm not so sure about that. TNA talent, they're not happy finding out about this on social media instead of it coming from their own boss. MVP was the first to go on Twitter. He started venting about how he wasn't told anything. You need to have communication. Then he went and posted his email address for booking inquiries if anybody wanted to book him on any shows. I mean, he was just going off. And then later on, he posted a video blog on YouTube where he attempted to explain what he meant by the outburst, and he took the time to bury the so-called dirt sheets. That's like the new favorite Olympic sport for all these TNA people. They want to bury the dirt sheets, which is such a stupid, outdated term to use anyway. He said, I'm not a fan of the dirt sheets or the dirt sheet writers. It's a stretch to even call them journalists. They're rumor mongers. That's what MVP said. You know, MVP comes off more often than not as a reasonably intelligent, articulate fella, which makes it all the more baffling that he would make such a stupid, moronic statement. Go ahead and Google Frank DeFord on Dave Meltzer, and then tell me it's a stretch to call him a journalist. If MVP even knows who Frank DeFord is, I doubt he does. But he's old enough where he should know who Frank DeFord is. Soon as I heard the word dirt sheet even mentioned, I knew exactly where this guy was going. Just so predictable. Maybe somebody should tell MVP not to tweet out of frustration. Don't tweet like a bitch if you then feel compelled to record a video as a way to try to explain yourself. Let me explain what I meant. No, don't tweet like a bitch. How's that for some advice? Because you make yourself look stupid. Now, in fairness to TNA, they didn't even know about the Ring of Honor news until it broke. Problem is, they already have the reputation of keeping their employees in the dark when it comes to stuff like this. This is nothing new. Everything's fine. Nothing to worry about. I literally had just posted a tweet that same day that the news broke. Okay, right before the news broke, I posted a tweet mentioning that in a podcast interview, James Storm was asked about the recent reports of Impact getting, you know, booted off the network. And James Storm said, he had been assured by top officials in the company that everything was fine. And so that's what he was going to go by. He was going to go by their word that everything was fine. And then this story broke literally minutes after I posted that tweet. And then a little while later, James Storm sends a tweet out that says, well, then there's that. I felt bad for the guy. I really did. In that instance, I felt bad for the guy. He honestly believed what he was told. He believed in what they were telling him, and then he looked like a fool. Now, on the conference call that TNA hosted with its talent that afternoon, they already had a conference call, I guess, that was scheduled or going to be scheduled, finally, to address all the rumors. Then this shit happened. Then they had to have a conference call, because nobody knew what the fuck was going on. But on that conference call, shockingly, nothing of note was really said. Did you expect anything less? So, apparently Billy Corgan cut a promo on Dave Meltzer, I guess for a match that's never going to happen. Dixie Carter said, everything is hunky-dory with Destination America. We're on good terms. We're already planning for 2016. She was asked about the rumors of there being an out clause in the contract. She said she could not comment on that, which is complete bullshit. Some wrestlers got heated during the call. I don't know which ones, but that was the report coming out of it, that some wrestlers, I mean, a lot of wrestlers were angry, but some of them got hot on the call. They just said, fuck this, and they were kind of going on and on and on. The issues with late pay were brought up, and Dixie talked about it like it was old news. It was in the past. Everyone's been paid, so there's nothing to talk about. 90 minutes this thing went on for. I haven't seen so little actually said over such a long period of time since the opening segment on Raw last Monday. Poor TNA. I mean, first they get served with divorce papers. Now they have to watch their soon-to-be ex bang the new guy while they're still married. I'd be angry and psychotic if I were them, too. I can only imagine the meltdown that must have been going on when this news broke on the TNA fanboy websites. I stayed away from them. I just couldn't bring myself to go there. But oh, what fun that must have been. I hope their parents took away their belts and shoelaces and secured their arm restraints before they tucked them into bed that night. I really wonder if Destination America's plan isn't to get audiences familiar with the product now, the ROH product, ahead of September, so that they can slide them into TNA's current slot. The only problem with that is it would be an hour, not two, because the syndicated show is only an hour. Impact is 2 hours. Maybe ROH gets bumped up to TNA's slot, and Jeff Jarrett's Global Force Wrestling is announced as the lead-in for ROH. You know, Jarrett's been fishing for a TV deal. He still doesn't have a TV deal done for GFW. If that happens, and Jeff Jarrett gets on Destination America as well, that's like a double fuck you to TNA. You know what? That's my prediction. I'm going to make a bold prediction here. My prediction is that nothing changes. TNA gets booted at the end of September, and Global Force Wrestling joins Ring of Honor as the new wrestling block on Destination America. I'm calling it right now. That's my prediction. Now, here's another wrinkle in all this, and some of you have asked me about this, and there really is no answer. Now that Ring of Honor is on national cable, how, if at all, does this affect Samoa Joe's appearance in New York City at their TV tapings coming up on June 20th? You know, Joe's advertised for a tag team match. He's going to be teaming with AJ Styles against Christopher Daniels and Frankie Kazarian. And boy, you know, talk about salt in the wound for TNA, given the four guys in that match. If WWE allows it to happen, imagine Ring of Honor hyping that up on television as their main event, leading right into Impact. Four of TNA's biggest names of the past 10 years on a competing show that's on right before their own show. Anyway, the short answer on the Joe stuff is that we don't know. My guess is WWE will probably, if their past behavior is any indication, they will end up pulling Joe from the show or forcing Ring of Honor to make it a dark match instead. But it's a unique deal that Joe has. It really is unlike any other deal that WWE has done. So, you know what? Who knows? But they haven't said anything. Ring of Honor has even said they don't know how WWE is going to react, but they're proceeding as though Joe is going to wrestle. So I guess we'll find out very quickly, because that show's only coming up in a few weeks. So finally, what does all of this mean for the Sound Off? I've gotten a lot of questions from you guys. Does this mean that now I can review Ring of Honor here on the podcast? Well, I'm going to leave that up to you. The fine members of the Sound Off Nation, which sounds only slightly less pretentious than WWE Universe. But I like the way that sounds, so we'll roll with it. Or maybe Sound Off Establishment. Maybe we can call you guys the Establishment. But anyway, the reality is, I'm not reviewing both TNA and Ring of Honor every single week. That's not happening. You know, maybe a few comments if I happen to catch both shows, which I might. You know, any given week, if I've got nothing else going on and there's something good on the shows, I might watch both. But that's going to be the extent of it. You know, it's one or the other. I just do not have time for both. The show is big enough as it is. And, you know, with everything going on with my family situation right now, I'm sure you all can understand. Now, this week, I might watch both because it's the first week. But that is not going to be a regular thing. So here's what we're going to do. You are more than welcome to tweet me and email me with your own opinion and preference and why you feel that way. But I'm going to sticky a poll question in our Facebook group. So this would be a good time to apply for membership if you haven't already done so, because it's a closed group. You need approval to get in. And the question is going to be very simple. Of these two choices, which show would you like to see reviewed on the Sound Off each week? TNA or ROH? And why? That part is optional, but you can write in the comments below why if you want to. So that's how we're going to handle this. I'll get the poll up either later tonight. Maybe I'll wait until Monday morning, maybe. Sometime in the next 24 hours, I'll get the poll up. I'll try to sticky that at the top of the group page. There's no deadline on this. We'll just see how the voting goes. And some point over the course of the week, I will make my final decision, and I will announce it on the show next weekend. And so that is how we are going to handle that. WWE is advertising Brock Lesnar for his first house show appearance in 11 years. July 4th in Tokyo, Japan against Roman Reigns. No, that's not it. It's not him. No, Brock Lesnar's opponent will be Kofi Kingston. Looks like New Day is going to be going from a trio to a duo after that show. So why is Brock wrestling on a house show, let alone one that's 15 hours away from home for a guy who hates to travel? Apparently, Brock Lesnar and a friend had wanted to go to Japan anyway to see Masa Saito. Masa Saito is a retired Japanese wrestler. Apparently, he's in very poor health. He was the one who got arrested many years ago with Ken Patera when Patera threw that giant rock. He threw like a boulder through a window at McDonald's one night because they wouldn't serve him. I guess they were closed. Maybe it was after a show. That's a famous story, by the way. I'm sure a lot of you have already heard it. That's why Patera went to prison. Saito, I think, went to prison also, but Patera went to prison, and so that interrupted his WWE run. WWE eventually brought him back. That's when he was kind of feuding with Bobby Heenan. Bobby Heenan had managed him previously, and then when he got arrested and jailed, he was out of the picture. When they brought him back, they were doing these vignettes of him, you know, getting out of prison, and I think he went after Bobby Heenan because Bobby never visited him and Bobby didn't support him, so they actually turned it into a storyline, although they never acknowledged the actual incident, I think, that sent him to prison in the first place. But anyway, they did go to jail, although I think Saito went to jail because they beat up a couple of police officers at the hotel when they went to go find Patera. They found both of them, and they actually beat up a bunch of police officers, and that is a no-no. Do not do that. Do not assault a police officer. Nothing good will come from it. So Brock Lesnar is going out there, but you know, Brock is a businessman. He knew the WWE was going to be in Japan, and so he figured, oh, I'm going to be there anyway. So the story is, the reason he's going when he is going is because he figured, why not make the trip tax deductible and get my transportation paid? So that's why Brock is going, and why he is working one match. He's not doing the tour. He's doing that one show on July 4th, and he's wrestling Kofi Kingston. I think Brock and Kofi could be a fun little match. Maybe not fun for Kofi, but fun for the rest of us. In fact, if they do Brock versus Kofi, if they don't change that match, and I think they're doing Jericho and Balor on that show. It was supposed to be Jericho and Itami, but Itami is hurt, so Balor is replacing him. They're doing those two matches on that show. They need to air that on the network. I don't care what the time zone difference is between the U.S. and Japan. Air it the next day on a time delay. Put it in your on-demand section. Who cares? You know, this is one of those special house shows I told you guys about that should be airing on the network. I'm not saying air all house shows, but this is the kind of show that absolutely they should air that on the WWE network. Brock is being advertised for Raw on June 22nd and the Battleground pay-per-view in July. So apparently they're bringing him back early, because I thought the idea had been to bring him back in July to get ready for SummerSlam. So it appears that whatever plans they had have changed. But the Beast is on his way back, and not a moment too soon. I think we would all agree, no matter whether or not you like Brock Lesnar or not, You got to admit, the show is not the same without him or Paul. Paul's going to be on Austin's podcast on the network after Raw tomorrow night. That should be a lot of fun. Speaking of Raw, we should probably get into Raw this past week from the Nassau Coliseum, the final WWE show ever in the modern incarnation, anyway, of the Nassau Veterans Memorial Coliseum in Long Island, New York. The first show I ever attended as a kid was at Madison Square Garden in 1987. I honestly don't remember what the first show would have been that I ever attended at Nassau. It would have had to have been not long after that, maybe like 88, 89, I would guess. I mean, I saw lots of shows there as a kid. The second Raw that I ever went to, I mean, this was many years later, but the second Raw show that I ever went to was at the Coliseum. I'll never forget, October 12, 1998. I remember that because I won tickets from my local radio station for the second time that year. And by the way, don't even ask me how I won tickets 8 times from the same radio station, because I did. I think in like a 2-year period, it was 8 times that I won free tickets to these different Raw shows. It was from 95.5 WPLJ when they used to give out tickets to WWE shows, which nobody does anymore because wrestling just isn't hot. But here in New York, the radio stations here would always give out tickets. But I won them, and I considered it was kind of like a belated birthday gift to myself, because we went to the show. It was only a few days after my birthday that year. That was the night that Austin poured cement, or cement, as JR would say, into McMahon's Corvette, and then the Big Boss Man made his WWE return after many years at the end of that show. I mean, I have tons of stories. I mean, the time I walked from my college campus, which was basically next door to the Coliseum, but it was in March, okay? It's not fun to go walking outside in March when you're having a really bad winter in New York. And anybody who lives on Long Island knows that the wind is far worse out on Long Island than it would be, say, here in Brooklyn. So it's March, late at night. I have a 103-degree fever, sick as a dog. And I walked to the building for Raw, which was Steve Austin's return for the first time since he walked out on the company. This was in 2003. In the build-up to WrestleMania 19, which, as it turned out, was Austin's last match. But we got a nice Austin vs. Rock face-off at the end of that show, so it was worth it. And then, of course, I almost ended up in the hospital the next day because I got so sick. So that was a fun story. The last Great American Bash pay-per-view was there in 2008. I mean, they kept the name The Bash, but the full Great American Bash name, they did away with it after that year for whatever reason. I guess they were alienating all of their international viewers. We can't do that. So that was the last Great American Bash show they did. I was at that show. Little trivia note, that was the last show before WWE officially switched to PG programming. And the last time they ever used the, like I said, the full Great American Bash name for a show. But the fact is, the Coliseum was a dump. The crowds were terrible. Not that people wouldn't go. I guess this is kind of like Corpus Christi. I talked about Corpus Christi earlier. People would go, but the crowd reactions, I mean, you know, Long Island is just notorious for having some of the hardest crowds to perform in front of. Which reminds me, actually, one more great story, maybe not so great story, from the Coliseum. I was at a Raw show there. This would have been in 2001. It had to be 2001 because Paul Heyman was still on commentary with JR. They go to commercial. Heyman gets up from the announce desk, grabs a mic, and proceeds to just trash us. He calls us the worst wrestling crowd they've ever performed in front of. It was hilarious because people just weren't reacting. So Vince McMahon was probably blowing a gasket backstage and got in Heyman's ear and told him, you know, stand up and tear these people to shreds. So anyway, I'll miss it for nostalgic purposes, but it really outlived its usefulness. And now we'll see what happens. You know, they're supposed to be renovating it later on in the summer. You may see WWE shows back at the new and improved Nassau Coliseum in a few years, but in its current incarnation, Nassau is no more. The story of the show on Monday night was Stone Cold Dean Ambrose being arrested early in the show and then returning just in the nick of time at the end to sign his contract for the match with Seth Rollins. I had no idea that the NYPD had jurisdiction in Nassau County. I mean, I certainly don't ever remember seeing any NYPD cop cars driving around Long Island when I was living out there. Maybe they do. Maybe they do. But that still does not explain the NYPD paddy wagon that Ambrose hijacked back to the arena in. Yeah, it's the little things like that that annoys me. Somebody who doesn't live in New York would not even know the difference. So it's not a big deal. But if you do live in New York, you know what I'm talking about. As far as the angle, I didn't care for it. I thought it was too hokey. You know, I don't know. Maybe I've just seen it one too many times to care. You know, when Austin did it the first time, it was edgy. When Kurt Angle did it with the milk truck, it was a blatant ripoff of Austin. But I think it was still entertaining, but I think it was also designed that way because the person that Kurt was hosing down with milk was Austin. So I think that's why they did it. This was just stupid. I mean, it's not a knock on Ambrose. He didn't script the show. He did the best with it that he could. I'm just happy he's in the main event for the championship, but I didn't like this angle. I thought it was dumb. The opening segment to set all of this up, I thought would never end. 30 fucking minutes to set up an opening tag team match with Ambrose and Reigns against Rollins and Kane. You know, they should ask themselves. I really wish WWE and the people who script this show would ask themselves. How is it that NXT and Ring of Honor and Lucha Underground are able to book main events that people want to see and overall book very entertaining shows, and each of them have less than an hour to work with? Taking out the commercials, they've got, what, 45 minutes, 48 minutes maybe, per show? And they do just fine. Nobody is clamoring for Blake and Murphy to come out and flap their gums for 20 minutes. Nobody wants to see Pentagon Jr. come out and speak Spanish for the first 15 minutes of the show. No, I want to see him go to the ring and break people's arms, and then rip them off and beat them over the head with it. That's what I want to see. But then I guess we wouldn't get our weekly dose of Justin Bieber jokes. So I thought that opening was just insufferable. The stuff with Rusev and Lana, you know, it started out shaky. I saw Rusev acting all happy towards Lana, and I'm like, oh God, he's acting. But I actually liked how the segment turned out. You know, he's out there acting all sappy, letting her know, we can crush America together. And then after Lana hugs him, he says, now all I need you to say are those three magical words. And instead of I love you, which is probably what most people would have thought, he said, I want you to say I was wrong. I thought that part was actually great. Then Lana pulls away from him and he freaks out and he says, know your place, woman, you belong to me. Just great heat for this from the crowd. The crowd actually woke up for this. The stuff with Ziggler, you know, I could do without that because they've acknowledged now on TV she's only kissing him to make Rusev jealous. And Dolph knows this, and he accepts this. And on the one hand, I guess I can't blame him because he's kissing Lana, so what the hell. But it just makes him look like such a dweeb. Just such a dweeb. Neville beat Stardust with the Red Arrow. Stardust taunted actor Stephen Amell before the match. He was sitting ringside. He's the star of the show, The Arrow, which is based off the Green Arrow character from DC Comics. I've never watched an episode of the show, but it must have a decent following because people started a campaign on social media a long time ago to get this guy on Raw as like a guest host or something. I guess he's a big WWE fan as well. Him and Stardust have been going back and forth on Twitter for a while now. WWE posted a video after the show on YouTube with Stardust challenging him to come back. And the website HollywoodLife.com is reporting that he and Stardust are going to have a match at SummerSlam in August. That's what they say. WWE, I guess, is just deciding whether or not he should wrestle as himself or as the Arrow character. I don't really care either way. I guess it's a fun thing for Stardust to be part of. It would give Stardust a feature match at SummerSlam if they keep him as Stardust. I thought they were doing away with the gimmick. That's why I think this company doesn't know what they're doing. It has looked as though they were transitioning him away from Stardust, right? He went on this losing streak. They would show him, you know, his facial expressions like, you know, what am I doing? And it looked like maybe he was going to go back to being Cody. And now he may be playing Halloween now with this guy at SummerSlam in a few months. So whatever, I guess we'll see. The stars of Entourage were on the show. No Jeremy Piven, though, although they did script a line for one of his co-stars to read, mocking him for his SummerSlam fuck-up a few years ago when he said SummerFest. I wonder if Miz is still banned. You know, it's funny. I remember doing the podcast when that happened, and it feels like so long ago. God, I've been doing this show for a long time. Now I feel old. I hate that feeling. They all came out. All the Entourage guys came out to introduce Zack Ryder as John Cena's opponent in the U.S. Open Challenge. Let me first say, John Cena, a genius that man is. Smart strategy on his part, ramble on and on and on and on for so long that half the locker room falls asleep and they cannot accept your open challenge. I see what he's doing here. Zack Ryder had no choice. Zack Ryder was only able to accept it because everybody else fell asleep. They were passed out on the floor backstage after that pre-match promo that John Cena cut. You know, Cena is very hit or miss. I know he was trying to get over the match with Kevin Owens at Elimination Chamber, but it's the same shit where he brings up the Let's Go Cena, Cena sucks chance. I know half of you like me, half of you don't. How many fucking times do we need to hear about this? It's been 10 years. We know. Enough. Just piss me off, this promo. So they had a match. Zack Ryder got to hit his Broski boot, which Shitty the announcer called the Broski kick. And he hit his Rough Rider finish, both of which John Cena kicked out of before hitting the AA for the pin. Ryder got to challenge John Cena for the U.S. title in front of his family in Long Island. He got to celebrate with the cast of Entourage when it was over. That was his WrestleMania moment. He looked so happy out there, even though he lost. It's all downhill from here. He may as well retire after that. Tamina looked awful in her match with Paige. She's looked terrible in the ring ever since she came back. I don't know if she's just working off ring rust. I don't remember her being this bad. I mean, was she always this bad? Maybe she was. I don't know. Because she's worse now. Somehow. And Paige with those clotheslines. You know, Paige doesn't get off either. Because Paige was throwing these awful-looking clotheslines that just completely exposed the wrestling business. Each one she threw was worse than the one before. And you could say, well, Tamina wasn't in proper position. Tamina didn't take it the right way. Then you know what? After the first one, and damn sure after the second one, Paige should have known, this fucking chick doesn't know how to take a clothesline, so let's just call an audible and do something else. But nope, three clotheslines, each one looked worse than the next. This was terrible. The main event was the angle they did with Ambrose coming out. You know, a thought occurred to me during the final segment. It's been almost 2 years now since this Authority storyline began. 2 years! It's felt like 10. I mean, we've seen variations of the Authority storyline in this company really for the last 17 years. But I think the Authority, I think it's safe to say, has worn out its welcome. I'm hearing now that instead of Lesnar against Rollins at SummerSlam, there's talk that plans may have changed. I mean, plans obviously have changed if they're bringing Brock back even earlier. Now it may be Triple H against Seth Rollins at SummerSlam. I don't doubt that Rollins against Hunter is the direction they're going in. Rollins is just, he's too pompous for his own good. He's full of himself. Now he's using Triple H's move. The pedigree is his own, at least for the time being. They're going to have a match. There's no doubt about it. They're building to a Seth Rollins-Triple H match at some point. I will be really upset, though, if we don't get Lesnar and Rollins at some point. Maybe they'll do that at Battleground instead. I don't know. That feels kind of like a step down. They should save that for SummerSlam. As long as we get the match, though, because, like I said, I think that has the potential to be a really fun match, especially with Rollins just bumping all over the place for Brock. So I hope they do it. But yeah, if the match with Hunter somehow leads to the end of this storyline, then you know what? I'm okay with it. They've got to end this. They've got to end this already. I mean, the opening 30-minute promos every week, the whining by Rollins, I'm going to tell on you, Kane, Mommy and Daddy are not going to be pleased, best for business. Okay, it's time. It's time to move on.
I'm actually not wearing pants, and that's how I watch NXT every single week.
Kevin Owens opened up the NXT show this week, entering to Sami Zayn's theme music and wearing John Cena's t-shirt. You don't see that every week. He said he's not scared of Samoa Joe. He will beat John Cena at Elimination Chamber as well. William Regal came out, said the only reason Owens still has a job is because, as Owens correctly pointed out, Regal put his hands on him first at TakeOver before Owens gave him that headbutt. He also said that he had nothing to do with Hideo Itami getting attacked, as Regal was running off the list of people that Owens has sent to the hospital. And Owens interrupted him and said, wait a minute now. I had nothing to do with the Itami. I like that. I like that because now they're planting the seeds of doubt. Like, yeah, sure you did. Even Regal said something like, yeah, okay, sure. Like, he didn't believe him. I don't expect that Owens is going to be the one who's revealed anyway. So he's probably telling the truth. This brought out Solomon Crow, who called Owens a piece of crap and said that on any given night, anybody in the back could beat him. Owens was feeling rather charitable, and so he granted Crow a non-title match in the main event. He got footage of Hideo Itami down in Birmingham after his shoulder surgery with Dr. Andrews, saying that he doesn't know who attacked him, but when he returns, he's going after Rikishi. I mean, the man who attacked him. We got footage from TakeOver of Zack Ryder being interviewed by Renee Young. God, this is probably the most TV time this guy has gotten in a single week. He wrestles John Cena on Monday. They're showing him on NXT on Wednesday. Boy, this is like a renaissance here for this guy's career. Although, his big role here in being interviewed by Renee Young was to be interrupted by that psycho Mojo Rawley. He's still hyped. Actually, I shouldn't call him a psycho. He was nice to us when we met him at the bar in New Orleans. A little psychotic. Bailey and Emma. Bailey's new gimmick is that she has these slap bracelets that she will slap onto the hands of all the young fans at ringside. I remember those snap bracelets from when I was a kid. I used to be scared of using them because it looked like it hurt. People tried to like, and that was the thing. People would come up to you, other kids would come up to you, and they would smack you with that stupid bracelet. And so you'd be paranoid because you'd be looking all over like, okay, where's it going to come from next? Those things were a menace. But it didn't actually hurt. They were cool. For about 5 minutes. Kind of like Adam Rose. Evil Emma no longer dances. She no longer has her trippy theme music. She's just a wrestler now. And she beat Bailey with the Emma Lock. So good for her. I can't remember the last time I saw Emma win a singles match. Dana Brooke interfered after the fact. I guess, well, the match was over. She didn't really interfere. But she double-teamed on Bailey with Emma until Charlotte ran down to make the save. Dana then laid her out with her crappy-looking move and did her forced poses. Backstage interview from last week they showed with Baron Corbin, who was talking so low I could not hear a word he was saying. Rhino then walked in and said their match at TakeOver was real intense and they should do it again. Then he left and Corbin stood there breathing heavily. I seriously thought they were going to fuck. I thought they were going to fuck. This was very weird. Blake and Murphy with the newly heel Alexa Bliss took on the team of Mike Wallace and Elias Samson, or at least I think they said his name was Mike Wallace. At first I thought they said Rollins. There's no way they'd give him that name, so I think it was Wallace. Isn't Mike Wallace dead? Anyway, the match itself, decent little match. Running vertical suplex into a frog splash finish by the tag team champions. After the match, Alexa did her sparkle splash off the top rope. Might have to come up with a new name for that. You're a heel now. Sparkle splash is just, it's too much of a babyface name. After the match, Alexa did a backstage promo that was actually pretty cool. She did a pretty cool heel promo, reminded me a lot of Trish Stratus. Apparently, I'm not the only one to make that connection, since she is referred to as Baby Trish at the Performance Center by people there. She said Carmella is from Staten Island, which is known for one thing, that is being a garbage dump. And they're going to have a rematch next week. I sure hope it's better than their first one. I have to say, though, in watching Alexa Bliss, and I made this comment on Twitter, she's beautiful. She is a beautiful girl. I think she may be legitimately the most gorgeous diva in the entire company right now. And they've got a lot of pretty women. Look, I'm not downgrading Lana or any of the women that they have. But I just think Alexa, naturally, I mean, she's obviously caked up with makeup as well, like every woman on that roster is. But I think even without it, I just think she may be the most legitimately, naturally beautiful woman they have. Finn Balor beat Ty Dillinger with the coup de grace. Nothing match. The announcers still can't get the name of the move right. Rich Bredin calls it the coup de grace, while Corey Graves calls it the coup de grace, which is how I was always told that you pronounce it. How about we just do this? Let's make life easier and call it a double foot stomp, okay? How about that? We got a weird segment in the gym with Greg Hamilton going up to Jason Jordan for an interview. Again, he apologizes for interrupting him before proceeding to interrupt him. You're not sorry, okay? You're not sorry, dude. You interrupt the guy anyway. Don't apologize for it. Grow a set of balls and just ask your question. I don't even remember what the question was. Newcomer Chad Gable made his first appearance on TV. He overheard something that Jordan had said about having found the perfect tag team partner. And Gable came over. He offered his services as Jordan's partner. Jordan's like, nah, I got one, dude. It's all good. Thanked him anyway. I figured they split Jordan away from Ty Dillinger because they had plans to make Jordan a single as a heel. You know, he's got that look. He's this big jacked up dude. He's an athletic guy. But it appears they're just going to put him with a new partner. I don't quite get that. He and Dillinger were building some nice chemistry together, but whatever. Main event was Kevin Owens beating Solomon Crowe with the lights out pop-up powerbomb. That's what he's calling it now. Crowe got very little offense in. I don't like Solomon Crowe. I'm just going to say it. He has shamed my name. I just don't like the character. It just doesn't work. There's just nothing about him in NXT so far that makes me go, wow, this guy is really good. I want to see more of him. I like the character. Or he has great matches. He hasn't had one great match yet. The character sucks. There's nothing overly special about him that he has projected on television. I mean, obviously, Sami Callihan's a good wrestler, and there were a lot of people very excited when they signed him. They wouldn't have signed him if they didn't think he had something. Of all the indie talents that they've brought in, I mean, he has just been a complete flop so far. You know, Neville was a success. Tommy was becoming a success before he got hurt. Balor is going to be a huge success. Already is. Owens already a huge success. Sami Zayn a huge success. I'm sure there's somebody I'm missing. Solomon Crowe, so far, there's nothing to really write home about. And I'm not quite sure why that is. I'm not sure if it's just the character, if it's his look. I don't know. But I am, you ask me, do you buy or sell on somebody? I am selling. I am selling on Solomon Crowe so far. And actually, that would not be a bad idea for a new segment on this show. I can have a segment called Buy or Sell, and I pick one guy each week. I will make a note of that. Come back to that later. So, like I said, I'm not a huge fan of Solomon Crowe. I was looking forward then to Kevin Owens delivering an apron powerbomb to him after the match before he was interrupted by Samoa Joe's crappy theme music. Joe came to the ring, and Owens, of course, bailed. Best part of this was on his way up the ramp, Owens just goes to Joe, "You should have stayed in oblivion." As if TNA didn't have a bad enough couple of weeks. Now they're just rubbing salt in the wound. And the funny thing about that also is, you know, this stuff was taped a few weeks ago before all this other stuff happened, so it just comes at the worst possible time for TNA. But that was NXT. Not the best show. They can't all be winners. Actually, I shouldn't say that because Lucha Underground is pretty much a winner every week. So NXT has some catching up to do. Speaking of Lucha Underground, we may as well get right into it here. Another excellent show this week opened with Johnny Mundo against Aerostar, the newly minted heel Johnny Mundo, wrestling as a heel for the first time. And there was a noticeable difference in the style of match he wrestled. It wasn't all flashy stuff, high moves, big dives out of the ring. It was a lot of mat-based, ground-based kicking and knees and stuff like that. I mean, he would mix in a flashy move here and there. So I think people may look at this and go, well, Johnny Mundo now is not as good of a wrestler. He's not as fun. He's not as exciting as he used to be. He's a heel. He's a heel. And, you know, you have to change things up when your whole character changes. So I don't have a problem with that at all. I think it's kind of refreshing to see this new side of him. He did get the win with his Starship Pain move, which I am not a fan of. Vampiro did a sit-down interview with Sexy Star. She will meet Pentagon in a rematch next week, a submission match. I don't like the sound of that for poor Sexy Star. She spoke in Spanish, so they used English subtitles. This was good. I'm not a fan of the intergender stuff, as you guys well know, but you can't say they haven't tried to turn this woman into a female superhero. They've done a very good job of that, making her into a very tough person. A lot tougher than any diva you would see probably in any other promotion right now. Prince Puma and Hernandez for the Lucha Underground Championship. Boy, this show goes fast. This was a great match, the best Hernandez match I have ever seen, apparently in his nearly 20-year career that I still can't believe. There was an interesting spot here, about midway into the match, where Puma was on the outside of the ring, and Conan had the referee distracted on the opposite side. And by the way, it makes me laugh every time I hear Melissa Santos announce Conan as Conan. Because I think of Conan O'Brien. It's not Conan, it's Conan. She pronounces it as Conan. I guess you can do that when you look as pretty as she does. So we had Puma outside the ring, and Conan has the referee distracted on the opposite side. Hernandez is going to do a dive, meanwhile, through the ropes onto Puma. Puma pulls a chair out from underneath the ring, and as Hernandez launches himself through the ropes, Puma nails him with a chair shot to the head. Now keep in mind here, Puma is the babyface. Hernandez is the heel. So I guess they're getting over the idea that Conan is teaching Puma all of his tricks. I kind of like that. It's a side of Puma we haven't seen before. It's the will to win. The will to want to retain your championship. Hernandez tried to border toss Puma into the metal gate that sits under the ringside balcony. Because again, the fans are not level with the floor. They're kind of elevated. They're up a little bit. So there's like a metal grate or a gate, whatever you want to call it, underneath, you know, that wall there. So he's trying to border toss him into it. Puma slips out, ends up turning it into a corkscrew moonsault off the balcony. Not the balcony 30 feet up, the little ringside balcony there. Onto Hernandez. That was very cool. Lots of near falls after that until Puma hit the 630 splash for the clean pin. Really, really fun match. The champ looked strong. The challenger looked strong, even in defeat. The action was great, better than I expected it to be. I did not expect this match to turn out as well as it did. That was a worthy main event, except it wasn't the main event. The main event was a death match between the returning Mil Muertes, the Undertaker of Lucha Underground, I guess you would call him, and Phoenix. Mil's got new gear that somehow makes him look even more badass than before. He and Katrina were accompanied by those three Lucha ghosts that we saw a few weeks ago wearing the ghost mask, the skeleton masks, who jumped off the lockers in the back onto Phoenix. There were a couple of unprotected chair shots to the head in this match, which only added to the brutality, but I don't need to see that. I mean, come on. That's just stupid. These two had an even more brutal casket match a few weeks back, or maybe a few months back at this point. My favorite match of the year was that Grave Consequences match, and there wasn't a single chair shot to the head in that whole thing that I can recall. Maybe there was. I mean, there were a lot of brutal shit that happened in that match. I don't remember it if it happened. The point is, you could do a match like that and not resort to shit like this. Come on. Come on. And this is not me being overly sensitive or politically correct. I mean, there is a legitimate, you know, reason to stay away from shit like that. So that was unnecessary. This was one of the more impressive feats. It wasn't just what followed, but Mil Muertes had Phoenix on his shoulders, kind of like a fireman's carry. He sprinted up the stairs with Phoenix on his shoulders. Very impressive, considering how big Mil Muertes is. And Phoenix is no small man either. He's smaller than Mil. But this guy sprinted up the staircase. Had no problem at all racing up there with this guy on his shoulders. I mean, the dude has good stamina, I will say that. So he brings him up. He walks onto the balcony platform. I keep saying the word balcony, and people who haven't watched the show probably have no idea what I'm talking about, or they keep envisioning it's the same balcony. There are different balconies up in the building. There's the one, of course, that Angelico did his crazy dives off of, which is way up there and is quite the distance between the balcony and the ring. There's another balcony on the opposite side of the building that's just, it's kind of in a weird place. The bleacher seats with the fans are right below it. That was the balcony that they climbed onto. And Mil Muertes delivered a powerbomb to Phoenix through the floor of that balcony. Unbelievable spot. People going crazy. Holy shit chants. Referee sprints downstairs. He's furiously pounding on the door. There was a room down below, apparently. He's pounding on the door, trying to open the door. It won't open. They go to commercial. They come back. Because, you know, the referee is trying to check on the presumably dead body of Phoenix, you know, down below. And this was not Dario Cueto's office either. I've seen that erroneously reported by some websites. It looked like some random room that he fell down into. I think Dario's office was on the other side. They go to break. They come back. We get the very first that I can recall replay in the history of Lucha Underground when they show us the powerbomb spot again. They don't do replays on Lucha Underground, but this time I'd say it was warranted. They didn't even do one for either of the two dives that Angelico did on the other balcony. But I kind of like that. I kind of like the fact they shy away from so many, really any replays. Every now and then I will say I wish they had one here and there. But I'm okay with that because, you know, WWE can sometimes show so many replays during a match. He threw a punch! Quick, let's throw it to a replay and let's show it in our super slow-mo camera that we love to use for every frickin' spot in every single match. Yeah, it looks cool. But do we really need a replay for every other move in the frickin' match? That's what annoys me when WWE does it. You know, it's like, there's no in-between. It's either one extreme or the other. Either you don't do them, or you do them every minute. So, they go way overboard with it when they do it, and what it does is that it takes away from the match. You're interrupting the match. You end up missing something that's going on live while you're watching something that happened 2 minutes earlier. So anyway, the Lucha Ghost Men carry, they break the door down. They carry Phoenix's dead carcass out of the room, basically body surfing him back into the ring. Mil Muertes hits his flatliner finish in violent fashion, the most violent flatliner or whatever you want to call it that I've ever seen, and gets the pin. Truth be told, Grave Consequences, which had an actual casket, was more of an actual death match than this was. But this was still great. This was not better than that match, but this was still brutal and violent and fun. Chair shots aside, Katrina climbs into the ring afterwards, gives Phoenix the lick of death. Now, that was not the end of the show. There was a rather controversial end of the show. Controversial in that there was a lot of divided opinion about this. Dario Cueto is with the crew outside the room where Dario's brother, Matanza, is kept under lock and key. And you remember what he told the crew. He told them weeks ago that if you fail me, one of you will pay. He even brought the crew into the room to show them his brother, this giant monster that's locked in the cage, and said, listen, you fail me again, you don't get a second chance. Well, they did. They failed him again. So now he says, you guys are going to have to choose which one of you is going to go face-to-face with my brother and face the wrath of Matanza. So Cisco and Castro, they look at each other, and they grab poor Bale. Bale was in the middle. He was in between them. They grab Bale. Dario says, press his face up against the bars. What happens next is seemingly the first televised execution in the history of pro wrestling. Aside from the one that's been slowly playing itself out on TV for years now with Dolph Ziggler's career. We hear screaming, we see blood splattering everywhere like something out of a horror movie. Castro and Cisco have blood all over their own faces, they're trying to look away. Until finally the screaming stops, the struggling and the squirming stops, and Bale's body goes limp. Bale has been murdered! I didn't like that guy anyway, so I don't have a problem with him being gone. You know, he was kind of like the annoying teenage kid in every horror movie who you just can't wait to see killed off, or pretty much every black guy ever in any slasher flick. It's true, they always kill off the black guy, even on Walking Dead. If you're a black guy in The Walking Dead, you may as well just slit your own throat. Another excellent show, especially the last two matches. The final segment, some people are going to hate it. I just accept it because I look at Lucha Underground as a television show. This goes back to what I was saying earlier when we were talking about ROH and TNA and Destination America, and I brought up Lucha Underground and why you can't consider Lucha Underground the number two or the number three promotion in the country because they're not a promotion. They're a television show. They're not a traditional wrestling show in the traditional sense. You can't judge it the same way. WWE could never get away with this. They can't do this because, well, first of all, PG, but even if they were in PG, they can't do this because it just doesn't work for their product. Okay, case in point, they were in PG back in 2004. Remember all those years ago when they had The Undertaker pull the lever to bury Paul Bearer in cement? He basically killed Paul Bearer. Then on TV, the announcers claimed he was gravely injured. They couldn't even acknowledge the fact that he was buried in this concrete crypt and suffocated to death. He was gravely injured, they said. You can't serve all of those masters. You do an angle where somebody gets killed, he's dead. I mean, you know, they try to have it both ways. Figure out what you want to be and be that. How many years did they shun the label of sport? We are not a sport. And then their DVDs would end up number one on the sports charts, and we'd get Did You Know facts every week about how they were number one in sports. When they negotiated for the new TV deal last year, what was their main selling point to networks? We're like live sports. We're DVR-proof. We're just like NASCAR. WWE has always had an identity crisis. Lucha Underground has no such crisis. They know exactly what they are, and they make no apologies for it. You either accept it or you don't. So it doesn't bother me. It doesn't bother me, but I can understand why it would bother some people. Some people watch that show. They don't like the way it's shot. It's shot like a telenovela. And they do all these over-the-top angles and Aerostar looking up at the cosmos and this guy's killing this guy. Like, I get it. It takes some time to get used to it and to adjust. But I say it every week and I'll say it again. If that's what's holding you back from watching the show, then you're really missing out. You know, you just got to give it a shot. Give it a shot. Get used to it. Give it a few weeks. Don't give it 1 week. Give it a month. And after a month, if you still don't like it, then you don't have to watch it. But I recommend this show every single week, and I can't tell you how many tweets and how many messages I get from people saying, holy shit, I watched Lucha Underground for the first time this week because Solomonster recommended it, and I was blown away. I can't believe I've been missing it all this time. So, you know, one week at a time, it looks like I'm converting people into fans of the show. You know, there's a reason for that. I wouldn't recommend it this strongly if I didn't think it was worth your time. Just give it a shot. I think you're going to enjoy it, even in spite of angles like the one they did here. If you accept it for what it is, you should have no problem with it. And if you're like me and you didn't like Bale, then you're happy with it. Mailbag time. If you have questions, you could email me, thesolomonster@gmail.com. You can also send in MP3 audio questions as well. Please include your name and where you are from. Richard from New York City. I had an idea for Roman Reigns that is crazy enough to work. Since Rusev is injured and might be unable to compete tonight in the chamber, what do you think about Roman Reigns replacing him and winning the Intercontinental title? He can defend against somebody strong at Money in the Bank and then face John Cena in a unification match at SummerSlam. Being the one to finally beat Cena would make Reigns look strong, and you finally get that much-needed title unification. Not a bad idea if you want to get another big name in there with Cena at SummerSlam, since, you know, Bryan is out and he's not going to be able to do it. But, I mean, are you sure that, you know, this is going to make him look strong? Because I would disagree, not with the fans. I think the fans would just crap all over the match. They don't want to see Roman Reigns be the one to beat John Cena after all these months. They've thrown Neville, they've thrown, you know, Sami Zayn, all of these beloved guys from NXT that the fans are into, and you're going to have Roman Reigns be the one to beat John Cena? You think the fans are going to react well to that? Because Roman's working his way back into the good graces of the fans right now. It's working. The people are mostly behind him. They're cheering for him. They're warming up to him. I think it would do more harm than good to put him in there with John Cena in the next few months. Maybe at WrestleMania. I could see that as a match at WrestleMania next year. I just think SummerSlam probably would be way too soon. Shannon says, we recently passed the 16th anniversary of the death of Owen Hart. In many ways, I see a lot of Owen and Daniel Bryan. What kind of push could you see Owen getting if he were still alive? But more specifically, how could you see him succeeding in the Cena-driven era of the past 10-plus years? I don't really think he would have spent much time, if any, in the Cena era. I think he would have been retired by then. I mean, that was always my impression, that Owen was not somebody who was going to overstay his welcome. He was building his dream home with his wife at the time that he died, and I'm sure his wife would not have been thrilled at the idea of him working another 5 or 10 years. I think Owen was probably on his way out. You know, maybe that would have been his last contract with the company. I mean, maybe not, right? A lot of guys say they're going to retire early. How many of them actually do? I think Lance Storm would be one of the few who actually did. And actually, his family and wanting to spend more time at home had a lot to do with that. So I think his fellow Canadian may have had the same mindset. I don't think that Owen Hart would have spent that many more years in WWE had he lived. And I definitely don't think he would have spent any time on the roster in the John Cena era. Maybe they bring him back as a special attraction every now and then, but yeah, I don't think he would have made it that far anyway. I really don't think. And as far as what kind of push he would have gotten had he stuck around a few more years, he would have been right where he was. I mean, they had him in the mid-card. You know, the Blue Blazer thing, they were turning him back into a comedy figure. I don't know how long that would have gone on for. He was where they had him slotted at. There was no way they were going to push him as a championship challenger. They had that shot. You know, I've talked about this before. When he came back after Montreal, Owen wanted out. Vince wouldn't let him out of his contract. Davey Boy, the only reason the Bulldog got out of his contract, he paid his way out of it. Vince said, okay, I'll let you go if you pay $150,000 of your own money. And Bulldog wanted out so badly, he did that. Owen could not get out of the contract. He still had years left on it. In fact, when he died, it was probably still the same contract. So when Owen came back, the first thing he did was he attacked Shawn Michaels from behind after the pay-per-view main event title match that Shawn had with Ken Shamrock. And it looked like they were building to Shawn and Owen for the championship, at least at the Royal Rumble, not WrestleMania. But they never even did the match. Did Shawn and Owen even ever have a match? I don't even know if they did. I know they did. They ended up transitioning the feud from Shawn to Hunter instead. It was Triple H and Owen for the European title. Actually, you know what? I think they did have a match. I'm pretty sure they did the match on Raw. If I remember correctly, he may have had Shawn in the sharpshooter, and I think Triple H, who was, he had like a bad knee. He was on crutches, and I think he hit Owen over the head with the crutch for the DQ. So I do think they did the match on TV, but it was a waste. That was a match they could have built up to the Rumble. I mean, you've got this personal story here. You screwed this guy's brother, this blood feud that Bret had with Shawn for how long? A year and a half? Owen comes back avenging his brother, and you build to a match on Raw? It just never made any sense to me because, you know, they had already done the two pay-per-view matches with Shawn and Undertaker. They had the match at Ground Zero, which was their first match ever. They did the Hell in a Cell match the next month, one of the best matches the company has ever had. There was no topping that match. That was the match that made Shawn number one contender. And it looked like they got away from the Shawn Undertaker stuff, and they were proceeding with Kane and Undertaker. That was going to be the big feud going into WrestleMania. And instead of doing Shawn and Owen at the Rumble, they do Shawn and Undertaker Part 3 in a casket match that wasn't as good. And that's when Shawn hurt his back, and he ended up leaving for 4.5 years. So, you know, how things might have been different if they did Shawn and Owen instead, we'll never know. I would assume Shawn doesn't go away for 4 years. And that makes the Attitude Era very interesting if Shawn sticks around. So that would have been the time to not put the title on him, but kind of keep him in that championship picture for a couple of months. You know, he's a main eventer for a couple of months. It wasn't going to last, though. It just wasn't. I mean, Owen was a great wrestler, but there were other people who were ahead of him and more popular than him at that point. It was a crowded field in the Attitude Era. You had Austin, Foley, Triple H, Rock, Taker. There was no room for Owen. There was going to be no room for him at the top. He would have been right where he was. And like I said before, I don't think he would have been around in the Cena era. He would have been gone. Steven, I should say, from Trenton, New Jersey. I read the NXT Women's Roundtable interview on WWE.com, and it got me thinking, who would you say is the greatest women's wrestler of all time? For my money, it would have to be between the Fabulous Moolah, Manami Toyota, and Sherry Martel. Well, it depends on what you mean by greatest. Are we talking titles and, you know, title runs? Because Moolah is awfully tough to beat in terms of that. She pretty much had a stranglehold on that women's title for like 30 years straight, or 28 years, or some ridiculous number like that. Yeah, WWE always talked her up like she was some kind of deity. Oh, the Fabulous Moolah. Yeah, because of them, she's always going to be the most famous women's wrestler of all time. The truth is, as a human being, Moolah was a piece of trash. She really was. She was a piece of garbage. You'll never hear it from WWE, but she did way more harm than good to women's wrestling. She probably set women's wrestling back a couple of decades with some of the things that she did. Just do your homework. You know, it's all out there. There's books that have been written. Do your research. Read up on some of the things that she is accused of doing. And not accused by one or two or three, you know, disgruntled wrestlers who, she beat. Okay? A lot of different people. A lot of people with big names. Like big female wrestler names that you would know. This is not a couple of people with an axe to grind. She controlled a lot of their contracts. She would take half of their pay. She was a pimp. She would whore out other women, young female wrestlers, to promoters for sex. She was abusive. She was a terrible person. And not only that, if we're talking matches, she was a shitty wrestler. I'm tired of this notion of the Fabulous Moolah is the greatest in-ring female performer of all time. No, she's not. She was shit in the ring. Name me one Moolah match that you've seen on the network, that you've seen on DVDs, that you saw in person when you were a kid, that was anything special. None. You saw none because she's overrated. She is one of the most overrated performers in the history of wrestling. Now, I enjoyed her comedy shtick with Mae Young, but Mae Young had a lot more to do with that than Moolah did. So I would not say Moolah was the best at all. Influential, absolutely. You can't deny that. But that would be like saying, you know, you can't call Hulk Hogan the greatest in-ring performer either, but you can't deny the impact that he had. I'm not denying or diminishing the impact that Moolah had. In fact, I'm saying she had a lot more impact in a negative way than I think you would even ever realize unless you stopped to really think about it and did your research. Manami Toyota probably would get my vote. I saw none of her as a kid. I knew nothing of Manami Toyota. How the hell would I know about her? I watched WWF when I was a kid. She didn't wrestle for them. If you would have asked me who Manami Toyota was, you know, back then, I would have told you it was something my father drove. But thanks to this wonderful little innovation called YouTube, I discovered her matches a few years ago, and I was just completely blown away. That woman was unbelievable. Unbelievable. She could hang with the men. That's how good she was in the ring. I would just sit here and watch her matches, and ended up watching another, and watching another, and watching another. So I would definitely vote for her. I would say that she was probably the greatest women's wrestler of all time. Dennis, has Sting returned to oblivion? Even he said he doesn't know what WWE wants to do with him, but he's been in hiding ever since. Is that a mistake on WWE's part? Well, I mean, not if they don't have any ideas for him, it's not. I don't want them just throwing him out there on TV without some sort of plan. You can't make him a GM now because he already lost to the Authority and shook Triple H's hand, which was dumb. So that's out the window. I'm stunned they don't seem to be setting anything up for him for SummerSlam. I mean, even if they're saving him for the Undertaker match at Mania next year, that's probably going to be it for Sting. That'll be his last match, too. You could get one more match out of him in the meantime and make SummerSlam an even bigger show. You know, Sting should get one WWE win before he retires. Plus, that way, if he wins, him and Undertaker both go into WrestleMania as winners, as opposed to Sting going in never having won a match here before. Tay from DC, not saying I want it to happen, but hypothetically speaking, John Cena has a kid fan base and the merchandise, I get that, but Hulk Hogan had the same thing back in the day, and people were sick of him too after 1992, even though it was in a rival company. What is stopping Vince from turning him, Cena that is, the way that Bischoff did Hogan in 96? We all know Reigns is going to get the belt soon and become the heir apparent, and Ambrose, I think, is a money heel like the new CM Punk or Brian Pillman, and Rollins is a Jeff Hardy clone as a babyface. So they have a few guys to feud him with if he does. What is the drawback? The drawback is none of them are the draw that John Cena is. At least not yet. And you do not turn the biggest babyface and the biggest draw in your company unless you are sure that you have somebody who has already shown you that this guy is right there. This guy's going to take Cena's spot. He's selling tickets. He's selling t-shirts. We can turn Cena. This guy's going to be the new Cena. Until you have somebody like that, you know, nobody's on that level, then you don't turn the guy. That's why they're not doing it. And finally, here's Scott from Birmingham, England. Quick question for you about Mike Tyson's stint in the WWF. Was being the special enforcer always his intended role for WrestleMania 14? Some people claim he was supposed to have a match against Steve Austin. If that's the case, who would Shawn Michaels have defended the title against? He was always going to be the referee or the enforcer of some kind. That was always the plan. You have to remember, this was at a time after he bit Evander Holyfield's ear. Eargate. His boxing license had been revoked. He was trying to get back in the good graces of the commission so that he could be reinstated and he could box again. So he wasn't going to come out of this looking bad. Whatever WWE was going to have him do, he had to come out of this looking like the hero of some kind. The goal was for him to A, give Steve Austin the rub and help put him over as the next big thing, and B, to rehab Tyson's image and make him the good guy when all of this was said and done. Even though he was a convicted rapist and he bit off Holyfield's ear, his people wanted to make sure that Tyson, if he was going to do this and you know, lower himself to wrestling. I mean, Tyson loved it. Tyson was always a wrestling fan, but everybody looked at it as a demo. What is he doing getting in the gutter with pro wrestling? Like boxing is some kind of classy sport. Give me a fucking break. But anyway, rehabbing his image was kind of a key component of whatever they were going to have him do. So they did the DX swerve, and I'm surprised they even convinced them to do that, because for a few weeks at least, the guy was a heel, crotch-chopping and doing all this stuff that didn't exactly make him look good. But they saw the bigger picture, and the bigger picture was it's all part of the plan, right? It's all a ruse, and in the end, it's going to be revealed he never really was with DX. And he'll count the pin for Steve Austin, and everybody will be happy, and everybody will celebrate. The goal was always to get the title on Austin, even more so, you know, after Shawn got hurt at the Rumble. So, yeah, that was always the plan. This week's sad tweet comes from yet another TNA performer. The hits just keep on coming for TNA. This one came from somebody who I actually like, Austin Aries. Austin Aries posted a tweet. This was after the conference call and all the Ring of Honor news broke. Posted a tweet that said, just because you have the scoop does not make you a great reporter. Knowing when it is and is not responsible to share that scoop does. First of all, Austin Aries would make one shitty reporter. So don't quit your day job. That's number one. Number two, I love how the TNA narrative went from Dave Meltzer is spreading vicious lies and falsehoods about us to, yeah, well, he should have just sat on the story instead of doing his job and reporting on what he knows. Every TNA talent needs to lose their Twitter privileges. Every single one of them. For the next 6 months, just take it away from them. Take it away. They are embarrassing themselves. And I like Austin Aries. But what a sad, stupid thing to tweet. There's going to be a lot of TNA guys, I'm telling you right now, 6 months from now, who are going to look really bad and really stupid. And they'll probably go back and they'll try to delete those tweets. But once you tweet it, it's out there. There's no taking it back. So this week's Sad Tweet Award goes to one, Austin Aries. Congratulations. If you have questions for the Sound Off, or if you have your own sad tweet suggestions, you can tweet them at me. At Solomonster is my handle. For mailbag questions, you can email me, thesolomonster at gmail.com. Follow me on Facebook as well. Facebook.com/thesolomonster is my profile page. We have two other pages on Facebook. One's a page, one's a group. The official page you can like. Just type in the full name of the show. You'll find the page. Click the like button. We're getting very close to 4,000 likes on there. And we also have a private discussion group that you need to apply for membership to. Well over 3,000 members. Lots of good discussion going on there. And again, I'm going to be sticking that poll question sometime in the next 24 hours. I'm putting the vote in your hands. What do you want to see reviewed for the Sound Off going forward? If you can only choose one of them, because I'm not doing both, TNA, Impact, or Ring of Honor Wrestling. One or the other. And again, I know I didn't do another Impact review this week because I just didn't have time to see it. I would imagine that that would change. With Impact moving to Wednesdays, it would become easier for me to see it. Friday night, it doesn't give me a whole lot of time because I usually am not around to watch the show live. So actually, TNA moving to Wednesdays, if anything, would make it easier for me to see the show. But I'm putting the vote in your hands. It's one or the other. I'm going to stick you the poll question. So, again, if you're not in the group, get in there, and we'll see what happens. I have a feeling I know how this is going to turn out. But, again, really stop and think about it. If you are a fan of wrestling, you know, the issue with TNA isn't so much the on-air product. There's some good stuff going on right now. I heard a lot of praise for the Dirty Heels Wolves match. They're doing their Best of Five series. I still want to see it at some point. I know there was a Knockouts cage match. When was the last time you saw a Divas cage match in WWE? Never. We'll probably end up seeing a cage match in NXT before we ever see one with the women on the main roster. So I like that. I like that. There's some good stuff on Impact. Obviously, I hear great things about Ring of Honor shows. I've been to a lot of the live shows. I just have not been a regular watcher of the TV program because I don't get the TV program until now. So get in the group. You can be part of that vote. And also, don't forget, we are on YouTube, youtube.com/thesolomonster. There may be some new content going up there very soon, so my advice to you would be to hit the subscribe button. And that's going to do it. Keep on supporting the podcast via PayPal. Use our Audible link. Buy a shirt. We have a new one up on our store. Again, the Didn't Happen shirt. And we will be right back here with a brand new episode next weekend. I'm actually going to be attending the Legends of Wrestling show at Citi Field. Citi Field is where the Mets play. And they're having a wrestling show at Citi Field, on the field. And Bret Hart is going to be there. Ric Flair is going to be there. Goldberg is going to be there. None of them are wrestling. But there are some other guys, I think, like Hacksaw Jim Duggan. The Nasty Boys may be wrestling. And then they'll have some indie wrestlers. It's kind of a mix of past and present. So I have tickets. I'm going. That's on Sunday next week. So I don't know how that may affect the recording of this show, because I don't think I'm going to be around much on Saturday, so maybe I'll try to bang the show out early on Sunday next week. There should still be a show. But yes, I will be at the Legends of Wrestling show, and I guess after that, I'll have some thoughts on that. So until next time, be well, stay safe. We will see you right back here next weekend, and until then, take care, guys.
The good, the bad, and the Ugly. The Sala Monster sounds off.
If WWE were a person, how would you describe them? It's just a very bizarre question. But these are the different options they gave as passionate, talented, funny, modest, except for all those did-you-know facts they pepper us with every single week. Kind, cheerful, sweet, surprising, adventurous, flexible. How the fuck can an organization be flexible? This is a real survey question here. You would think you were going on a date. I have no interest in dating WWE. They're clingy, they're painfully unfunny, and all they do is talk about themselves. They're not my type.
The Monster sounds off.
Since 2007, The Sala Monster sounds off. Available at thesalamonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Solo Monsters sound off.